Good morning. This is Tales from the RAV4 this morning. I'm in my beautiful daughter's car because she said, "Dad, can you take my car to the mechanics?" All right. So, it's slightly different acoustics. This one's called Butterfly Bay. We're rolling, well, sailing. I'm the first up, which is rare. Dave's normally up at the crackerjack's ass. Maybe he had a promise on this morning. Sorry, this is a 27-year-old talking here. I don't know, but I don't hang around. I climb down into the dinghy with the oars and push off. The beach is only 100 yards away and my rowing has improved. I trail a lure on a hand line from the back of the boat, hoping for a bite. Whoa! The bottom of the ocean shelves up suddenly and a green flash brushes the bottom of the boat. For a split second, I think it's a croc. Oh, shit. It's only seaweed, Rich. Stay cool. Stay cool. I'm jumpy. Another jerk and I flinch, but it's the lure this time. Too much lead on the line and it's snagged the weed. I wind the line in and the dinghy floats back to where it's snagged. I can see the lure sparkling on the seabed, but I'm not game enough to swim down for it. So I take an oar out of the socket and push in against its buoyancy, try to free up the hook. Whoa! As soon as the oar hits the water, a shark darts in for a look. It's only a reefy. And darts out as quickly as it came, like a metre long reefy. I row into the shallows and drag the boat ashore. It's peaceful, the sun's rays kind and the flies not too overwhelming. The shoreline's littered with shells and debris thrown up high on the beach by recent heavy seas. Huge nautilus, baler, sand, dollar shells. It's probably that cyclone, actually, that we'd just experienced, the edge of the cyclone swell. So there's a rope, thongs, an old plastic drum, and a boy from one of the pearl farms, Paspaley Pearls. They have these floating pearl rafts out here. I'm about to make myself a shelter and round up some wild goats when Dave hollers across the water.
"Hey, Crusoe! Sorry to trouble yous, but I ain't fucking swimming ashore."
Dave is mildly pissed off when I clamber back up the steps of a Magicka, checking out his dinghy for any damage. He's all geared up with his golf clubs, ready for a knock around. Dave soon gets bored whacking golf balls. He slices one into the ocean, which spooks a couple of reef sharks. They're pretty bold, though, and they soon return. Dave tries to whack those instead, trying to get a feed. It's getting very hot. The flies are building up on the beach. One sort of movement and at least 50 flies would take flight from the back of your shirt. You could easily go mad trying to outrun them. I think this is one of the only times I've seen Bri absolutely lose his shit. Like, he was sailing the yacht and the flies kept bugging him. He's like, "Fuck, fuck the back." He's way... I think he lost like 2 hats and a pair of sunglasses over the side by belting his own face. Dave decides we should backtrack a few miles up the coast where he'd spotted a waterfall that spills over into a small estuary. We sail back north into an estuary and the crew pile into the dinghy. The dinghy sits low in the water. I said 6 inch before, but I've said here maybe 8 inch off the gunwales. Guess it all depends how many people are in the dinghy, right? It was only a small thing, something you could, like a fiberglass one, and you could drag it up on deck. So it was, you know, you could actually, like, can't be too big, else it'd be cumbersome. You'd be having to dodge around it all the time on deck. Dave cranks a very small outboard motor. I think it was like half a horsepower or something. Like, the water's murky green. It's like a mirror, giving no clues as to what lies beneath. It's like spirulina colour. I sit up front, folding my arms tight into my body, anticipating a croc bursting out of my reflection and leaning in for lunch. I think back to the recommendation. It is recommended, due to the high number of estuarine crocodiles, that one takes a gun into the Kimberley. Our only weapons are the oars and fishhooks. Dave moors amongst the mangroves and we step gingerly ashore. The hike up through the bush is dense. Dave steams ahead and we follow his lead, even down to stepping barefoot through the thorn-infested undergrowth. Dave points out the green ants above us in their little houses. They look like the bull ants that the jumping jacks, bull ants that we get on this side of Australia. But the bums are actually green, and the indigenous people would use them and still do for like a garnish. They're like a lime. They taste like limes. And I actually picked one up once. I braved it, picked one up, and if you lick, just put a tongue on its backside. Sounds gross. You know what I'm saying? And it tastes just like limes. Beautiful. Oi, stop licking my arse. If you happen to disturb the nest, soldier ants drop down on top of you and set about hurting you. Here we go. Get one on its own, though. Pick it carefully up and taste its green backside. Zest. Tastes like limes. The trip to the top is a pilgrimage to visit the freshwater god who tumbles over smooth rock, tasting pure and sweet. The water takes a crunch out of our salt-encrusted bodies. Hair that we've worn like helmets fall over our faces. Despite being overwhelmed with the minerals, washing out at sea was great. Standing naked under a vivid galaxy of stars, throwing out another bucket of water into the ocean, the bioluminescence scooped in with the cooling water sparking off your skin. But the fresh water, that was super sweet. It's a time for rejoicing. Later, fully refreshed and totally zinged out, with a little trepidation, we all clamber between the mangroves back into the dinghy. We're heading back to Imagica. When Dave remembers that we'd left the fishing hand lines on shore, I'd actually left them there. The bank was slippery at mid-tide and a thick grey layer of mud sloped down from the tide line. Rich, get the lines! When we'd first stepped out, I'd really taken my time and been careful. But with an audience and a bit of pressure, I stepped straight out of the dinghy onto the bank. And instead of using the rock ledge to one side, I step onto the slippery slope. I know I'm doing the wrong thing. I slip straight under the dinghy into the murk and disappear. There's like a 1 foot gap or something, and I managed to fit under it. So I've slipped down and I'm underneath the actual dinghy in this murky green water. I could try and explain to you what it feels like to be down here in the dark, wedged between the dinghy and the rocks, anticipating the jaws of a croc around my midriff. But I'm up on the back and on dry land before the water has time to soak through my clothes. Yeah, you don't muck about. You do not muck about. The following morning, I hope for another solo trip in the dinghy. But I can hear the familiar sound of Imagica's hull cutting through the ocean. Imagica heels over and I roll up on the cabin wall. I stagger into the galley, trying to work it out with gravity. Gussie's at the table, sat tight in a corner, eating Vegemite on Weet-Bix. Dave only had a small freezer, so we ran out of bread real quick. So, we're all dreaming about doughy bread and having to use substitutes. Sayo crackers and Weet-Bix. Gus was 40 years old, and she'd come up the coast with her son after a marriage had fallen to bits. And she was working as a barmaid in the Downer Beach Yacht Club. Her son, 16, got work on her fishing boat, and she took off with Dave. By mid-afternoon, we're squeaking around on the white sand beach at Cape Talbot. On the beach, there's a track gouged in the sand from the all the way from the dunes into the sea. And on either side of this deep gouged track, there's like soccer ball-sized divots, evenly spaced. "Fucking big lizards round here," Dave laughs. It was a massive croc slide. That's what we'd come to know as croc slides. And it was very off-putting when you were like in a muddy creek bed and you look up the sides of the estuary and there's like these deep croc slides. Like they could just slide down and with the mouths open. Dave's cracking up at the fear on our faces. This is one massive croc slide. At the south end of the beach, there's a small creek fringed by mangroves. The mangroves are really dense, forming a canopy over the creek, where it meanders back inland. Everyone seems tense. Even Dave, who is a crazy bastard when it comes to taking risks, is on the back foot as he crouched at the water's edge with his hand line. Hundreds of bait fish glistened in the afternoon sun, jumping high out of the water in perfect synchronicity to avoid the predators beneath. The tiny splashes overlapping to form one big bloop. The banks of the estuary are exposed at this time of the tide. I spot a mud crab twice the size of my hand shuffling back to its burrow. I grab an oar from the dinghy and almost flatten the poor sod, trying to put it completely out of its misery. I'm not good at killing stuff. An Aborigine once told me he always tells an animal he's about to kill that he's sorry, but he needs his meat to survive. I've always had a problem ending another creature's life. It's normally the bloke down the abattoir doing the dirty work. I heard a good analogy the other day. It was, you're either the assassin or the accomplice when it comes to eating meat. I think, though, you appreciate it more if you've killed something and then you've looked into its eyes as it's dying and then you're eating it. You've got more appreciation and you're not going to just throw bits away like it's nothing. It's almost dark when we drag the dinghy out into the shallows on our return to Imagica. It could be risky too. Sometimes you're sort of deep in mud. This time it was sand, but other times you're stepping over a reef in the dark. Sketchy as. What was that noise? Bray asked nervously. It's like a barking noise. It sounded like a cross between a cow and a seal. And it echoes across the mangroves. The noise stir up wild dogs and they bark too. Later that night, I'm laid in the galley staring up through the roof hatch at the mass swaying around the galaxy. And the galaxy's so vivid out here, there's no light pollution. You can see there's actually a shape, looks like a shadow of a person, like your head and shoulders. It's really peaceful. Only the ropes clicking against the rigging and gentle ripples of water lapping against the Magica's hull. I close my eyes. Behind the ropes and the waves, I can hear another sound. A noise. It sounds like water leaking up on deck. I climb up through the galley to investigate, but now I can't hear it. Oh, we left the fishing lines out. I decide to reel them in. It's not a good idea fishing at night around these waters. Sharks are everywhere, and there's only so much shark you can eat before the ammonia puts you off. Because sharks, they're only like small sharks, but like reefies that we saw. Oh, I saw a massive shark one day, but yeah, just mainly reefies coming in like really efficiently. If you get a line out, they're chasing your bait all the time. One was so hungry it banged into the dinghy one day. But they, if you don't bleed them out right, because they urinate through their skin, and if you don't bleed them out properly, which I didn't really know how to do, the ammonia stays in the meat. So on the first day, like, I caught these tiny shark ones, and I felt so bad because I couldn't get the hook out, and I ended up hurting it, so I ended up having to kill it, and then made a curry out of it, so not to waste its life, and it was great that night, but the next day, the leftovers just reeked. I wind in the lines, just clean hooks on the end. All the water sounds. I need a pee. I lean over the port side rail on tiptoes. Boof! Suddenly a great croc breaks the water, launches itself at the yacht, and bang, smashes into the gas bottles, into the hull at the stern. I can see the lightness of its underbelly before it sinks back underwater. Fucking scared the shit out of me. Because, you know, crocs, if you've seen the nature shows, they kind of like drive themselves out of the water using the tail. And it had come probably a good meter or so. Well, probably a meter. Yeah, a meter and a half out of the water. And the gas bottles for the yacht, they're underneath the seats at the back of the cockpit. So there's a ladder goes up from the back to get back in the boat when you're in the dinghy. And then on either side of that, there was a gas bottle, like a 20-litre gas bottle. So it's safer, you know, being away from where it could blow up in the yacht. And it had wiggled its way up, banged into the gas bottle and left like a claw print down the side of the ladder. What croc, Dave asks, as he shines a torch over the water. My scream had woke everyone up. And they're stumbling around the cockpit, hanging over the side. I try to explain how this big croc was prowling around, but now there's nothing. Dave's giving me the look. I grab Dave's torch and shine it into the darkness. About 20 yards in front of the boat, a red eye shines back at me. No one else can make him out until they stand directly behind the torch and eye down the beam. One red eye turns into two eyes as the croc slowly rotates its head to face us. Then the salty raises its back and tail from beneath the water, revealing how big he is. Like all the armory, all those sharp triangles just come up. And the dude's like 12 to 15 foot long. And then it disappears. Where is the git? Bray asks, feeling pretty brave from his position in the cockpit. I'm scared. I see now how he could propel himself. I shine the torch on the port side, scanning the water. The beam held in the murk. Fuck! He was right there. He dropped off from 20 yards in front, sunk down, cruised over to us and just risen up out of the depths. And he's got this smile on his face. Like grinning. He's within a couple of feet of the yacht, looking up at his big red eyes. In this skull that looks almost half a meter wide. I'd never looked into the eyes of something that wanted to eat me before. I could take you for a roll under the boat. Pull the last breaths from your struggling, pathetic body. This croc had no doubt where he stood in the food chain. Chuck a coconut at him, Gus shouted. But the croc sinks back down into the darkness, grinning as he goes. Ugh. This is the first crop we'd seen, to be fair. We're all a bit giddy about it. After all the excitement and everybody had gone back to bed, I take up my place in the galley, but I can't sleep. We'd started sleeping in the galley because it's less stuffy and you could look up through the hatch at the mast and the galaxy. After all the excitement and everybody had gone back to bed, I take up my place in the galley, but I can't sleep. I can hear the noise again, running water. But it turns out that sound, it's actually the small shells and bits of coral on the seabed. And as the tides and the currents move these shells, they make like a trickling noise that sounds like water running. And that sound travels up, I think it travels up through the anchor chain, or it travels up through the water. I'm not 100% on that. If you could just build a small yacht, get an anchor chain, go out and do some experiments, that would be good. And just leave a comment in the podcast. Thanks. Oh, yeah, and if you want to pick me up and take us for a spin somewhere, that'd be great too. Up the coast. I consider the frailness of our fiberglass bubble. The croc, apparently crocs can sense your heartbeat from a distance too, which is quite disturbing. Like, ooh. Fuck it. They're amazing creatures. I consider the frailness of our fiberglass bubble. The croc listening to my fast heart beating. Could he break through? I doubt it, but I'm so disturbed by the power of his lunge. I believe he can do anything. Climb up the back steps, water dripping off his scaly elbows. Crocodiles are slow, patient reptiles, known to watch their victims for days, studying their routine, sussing you out, picking just the right moment, and then bang, exploding into an attack. 2 tons of jaw pressure working septicemia-laced teeth through flesh and crushing bone. Then, because he can't chew, he'll take you on a death roll and wedge you under a submerged rock or maybe a tree root. His larder, until the septicemia rots down your body and the flesh comes away from the bone more easily. There's actually a true story there, where a guy woke up in one of these larders. Fuck. I think he was floating up. Wedged him under a tree and he was kind of floating up. He's like, fuck, where am I? Fucking croc's larder. Dave never used a dunny on the boat. The seal on the lid sometimes failed, and whatever was in the pan overflowed onto the floor. The dunny was a sore subject because I blocked it up a couple of times, and the results weren't good. And there was a bit of tension living on the yacht. I mean, I get it more now because, you know, imagine you put 2 years of your life building this yacht, and then you got people just casually doing stuff on the yacht without knowing the full consequence. Like, once we use a cooker without Dave being there, and if you're not careful with your gas, you can blow your yacht up. And same with a dunny. We were just young and probably a bit unappreciative. So I said here that the tension on the yacht sometimes was a worry, because it was like living with your boss in his house. Not being able to do anything without first getting the okay from Dave, which could be a real blow to the self-esteem. So while you're romanticising about how great this trip was, there was that element of it that you're in a bubble with other people. And I've travelled with other yachties on bigger boats, and Dave was a good skipper, like, in comparison. But the most fun I've ever had sailing is just with a couple of Tongan kids in a little tiny yacht, little dinghy thing. And we nearly got washed out to sea in Tonga, and we had the best time. And it was just freedom. Like when I stole the dinghy that day. Just being in charge. That's the thing. If you go on a yacht with others, be prepared to be just a component, and the skipper is the brain, and you're like an appendage, like an arm or a leg. Yeah, move that, pull that, do that, do this. No, don't fucking do that. Don't fucking do that. sorry. One particular day, I was in a all skippers are wankers kind of mood, and I mentioned to Brian, Dave would be giving us advice on how to wipe our asses next. Okay, guys, lean on your right cheek and using your left hand, proceed to... Later that day, I'm in the dunny enjoying the solitude and sanctuary of the little room. When Dave opened the hatch above me. You making a nest down there, Rich? You're using too much dunny roll. No wonder the dunny's blocked. So he literally was telling me how to wipe my ass. But, Dave was keen to hang off the ladder at the stern to save himself the issue of the dunny and, I guess, extending his curl on better as well, feeding the fish. But maybe he won't be so keen now after the croc left a muddy footprint next to the ladder at the spot where he normally hangs his ass. That'd be an embarrassing way to go, wouldn't it? Having a poo and a croc eats you. Or, like, grabs you. Oh. Wouldn't be too much fun for the croc either, I would imagine. Hello. I'm back in the ute, and I'm in a different location though. I'm above trapdoors in the car park, just trying to rattle off this last page. It's all about crocodiles. And Dave. So Dave had spent 6 months in Darwin working as a marine mechanic. And in that time, he'd seen a lot of crocs and heard a lot of croc stories. When we were sailing, he let us hear a few of his best ones. People who had come through the Kimberleys. There was a couple, they were on a catamaran, like a low-lying cat, sat low in the water, sailing from Darwin to Broome like us. The wife had washed herself up on deck, but instead of roping out for a bucket like everyone else was, she had this slightly sketchy habit of jumping in the water to rinse off. She was treading water when her husband called out, "Get on the fucking boat now!" She shot up the ladder and the croc launched up on deck after her. The woman shot down into one of the hulls. The husband hid in the other, pulled down the hatch. The croc was thrashing around deck wildly, tail smashing into stuff, and the couple just huddled in the hulls, peeping through the gap at this massive croc. They couldn't do anything. They had to wait until it had had enough, but crocs, known for their patience, took ages. Apparently they were stuck in these holes for hours. Like, I think crocs can survive without eating for... I can't remember how long it is, but it's a lot longer than a human can. Luckily, it wasn't practicing that skill at that time, and... Eventually, the croc slid back down into the water and swam away. Another guy went fishing for barramundi up an estuary in his tinny. When he reached the top, he left his tinny, tied off and headed upstream for some fresh water from the falls. But when he returned, his tinny was fully dried out, and he was way high and dry above the waterline. It was too far to drag his tinny to the water, so he went, "Oh, fuck it." So he cracked a beer and just lay down inside it and fell asleep. thinking that when he wakes up, the tide will be back. And now, where is Mike? A while later, he woke in extreme pain. A croc had come along and seen his boots hanging over the end of the boat and had a bit of a chew. Luckily, he was rescued and flown to hospital, where apparently from his bed, he told people that he thought himself lucky because he normally slept the opposite way around. The final story, this was more horrific. It's at a place that we visited. It's up the Prince Regent River. It's an amazing place. The Prince Regent goes inland for like 60 odd Ks plus, I think. And you're battling the tides to get up there. There's big whirlpools and stuff. But there was an American model. Her name was Ginger Meadows. Shawnee, young lass. And she came to Australia and she ended up on this tour straight up into the Kimberleys. It's kind of like a whirlwind tour. So I don't think she understood the gravity of the dangers out here. And I'm not sure about the tour guide, whether he was had fully explained them. But this is how it unfolded. So Ginger Meadows, an American model who came here in 1987 on tour with her friends. King's Cascades is a fresh waterfall. It was possible to climb up the face of the falls to bathe in the crocodile-free waters beyond. So you pretty much go up the Prince Regent River, say 60 Ks, and then you chuck a right into this little side tributary where this waterfall comes down. Ginger and her friends had rowed across in the dinghy, including the guy who ran this trip, to the face of the falls. The climb wasn't that steep, more like a huge mossy staircase, and it went up about, I don't know, 10 metres, maybe a bit more. But Ginger and another girl didn't want to climb the cliff, so they stood at the bottom on a narrow ledge, only just above the waterline. The rest of the gang climbed the falls and were beckoning Ginger and her friends to come up and enjoy the fresh water. It was at that moment a croc surfaced and made its way toward the girls. Ginger panicked. She thought she'd have a better chance in the water than climbing the cliff, and so she jumped in and swam toward the dinghy. A friend watched helplessly from the top of the falls as a croc snatched her up in its jaws and took Ginger on a death roll in the murky waters. The croc resurfaced with Ginger still between its jaws. She was motionless in shock, her eyes wide open. The croc took her down again, and Ginger was gone. So with this story in the back of our minds, when we arrive at King's Cascades, its reputation precedes it. 60 kilometres up the Prince Regent River, tucked in a nook off the main estuary, with just enough room for us to moor up inside. Way above us, the cliffs loom, and at its base, the spot where Ginger was attacked.
Rich, jump down in the dinghy, will you, and tie us off on that tree over there. Fucking hell. Fucking hell.
I row across and quickly grab the old rope that's hanging off a gum tree. The tide's running out quickly, and as it does, the cliffs grow. By sunset, the tide had dropped over 20 feet, leaving us with only mud to float in. The tree towering over us and the mooring rope now tight. We're in a muddy basin. Bry shines a torch and dozens of red eyes shine back. Yeah, it's really crocky. We went up to climb one of the cliffs one day and we rowed back just in the mud. It was like thick mud and we're just making it back across this water. And we'd seen this huge croc crossing the Prince Regent from the top of this cliff, just big slow tail slaps like big animals do, like big tiger sharks, big whites, big crocs. Scary stuff. Thanks for listening. If you like this episode, please put some comments somewhere, because it gives me inspiration to do the next one. Lets me know I'm hitting the mark or not. Just let me know what you liked, what you didn't like. And sorry, Dave, for wrecking your dunny, if you're listening.